Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Janavallabha Girivaradhari. Gopi Janavallabha Girivaradhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Jamuna Tiravanachari. Yamuna Tiravanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Janavallabha Girivaradhari. Gopi Janavallabha Girivaradhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Jamuna Tiravanachari. Jamuna Tiravanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari.
Jayam Vishnupad Paramahansa Privraj Acharya Stotra Sata Shri Srimad His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. Gaur Premanande. Hare Krishna. Good morning. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 27. That's not text 3, text 5. Text 5. This is a presentation made by disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Kuto nuta detava isha tat krita. Kuto nuta detava isha tat krita. Lobhadayo ye abudalinga bhavaha. Lobhadayo ye abudalinga bhavaha. Tatapi dandam bhagavan bibharti. Tatapi dandam bhagavan bibharti. Dharmasya guptyaya kala nigrahaya. Dharmasya guptyaya kala nigrahaya. Kuto nuta detava isha tat krita. Lobhadayo ye buddhalinga bhavaha. Tatapi dandam bhagavan bibharti. Dharmasya guptyaya kala nigrahaya. Kuto nuta detava isha tat krita. Abhadiyo ye buddha linga bhavaha. Tatapi dandam bhagavan vibharti. Dharmasya gutyaya kala nigrahaya. Kuto nuta detava isha tat krita. Lobhadayo ye buddha linga bhavaha. Tatapi dandam bhagavan vibharti. Namasya guptyaya kala nigrahaya. Kuto nuta detava isha tat krita. Lobhadayo ye buddha linga bhavaha. Tatapi dandam bhagavan vibharti. Dharmasya guptyaya kala nigrahaya. Kuto nuta detava isha tat krita. Lobhadayo ye buddha linga bhavaha. Tatapi dandam bhagavan vibharti. Dharmasya guptyaya kala nigrahaya. Kuto nuta detava isha tat krita. Abhadiyo ye buddha linga bhavaha. Tatapi dandam bhagavan vibharti. Dharmasya guptyaya kala nigrahaya. Kutaha. How? Nu. Nu.
Certainly. Tat. Of that. Existence of the material body. Hetavaha, the causes. Isha, O Lord, tat kritaha,
produced by one's connection with the material body. Lobha adayaha, greed, and so forth. Ye, which, abuddha, of an ignorant person. Linga bhavaha, symptoms. Tatha api, nevertheless. Dandam, punishment. Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Burbarti, wields. Dharmasya, of the principles of religion. Guptyai, for protection. Kala, of wicked persons. Nigrahaya, for the chastisement. Translation. How then could there exist in you the symptoms of an ignorant person, such as greed, lust, anger, and envy, which are produced by one's previous involvement in material existence, and which cause one to become further entangled in material existence? And yet, as the Supreme Lord, you impose punishment to protect religious principles and curb down the wicked. Please repeat. How then could there exist in you the symptoms of an ignorant person, such as greed, lust, anger, and envy, which are produced by one's previous involvement in material existence, and which cause one to become further entangled in material existence? And yet, as the Supreme Lord, you impose punishment to protect religious principles and curb down the wicked. Purport. This complex philosophical statement by Indra may be analyzed as follows. In the first line of this verse, Indra refers to the main idea expressed at the end of the previous verse, namely that the great currents of material existence, which are based on ignorance, cannot possibly exist within the Supreme Lord. The words tad detavaha and tat kritaha indicate that something causes the modes of nature to manifest, and that they in turn become the cause of that which caused them. In the second line of this verse, we find that it is material feelings such as greed, lust, envy, and anger that cause the modes of nature to manifest, and that are themselves caused by the modes of nature. The explanation of this seeming paradox is as follows. When the conditioned soul decides to associate with the material qualities, he becomes contaminated by those qualities, as stated in the Gita 13:22, karanam guna sangosya sad asad joni janmasu. For example, in the presence of a seductive woman, a man may give in to his lower instincts and try to enjoy sex with her. By his deciding to associate with the lower qualities of nature, those qualities manifest in him very powerfully. He is overwhelmed with lust and driven to try again and again to satisfy his burning desire. Because his mind has been infected by lust, all that he does, thinks, and speaks will be influenced by his strong attachment to sex. In other words, by choosing to associate with the lusty qualities of nature, he has caused them to powerfully manifest within himself. And eventually, those lusty qualities themselves will cause him to accept another material body suitable for affairs governed by those qualities. The lower qualities, such as lust, greed, anger, and envy, are abuddha linga bhavaha, symptoms of ignorance. Indeed, as indicated by Srila Sridhar Swami in his commentary,
The manifestation of the modes of nature is synonymous with the manifestation of a particular material body. It is clearly explained throughout the Vedic literature that the conditioned soul requires a particular body, this conditioned soul receives a particular body, gives it up, and then accepts another simply because of his involvement with the modes of nature, karanam guna sangosya. Thus, to say that one is participating in the modes of nature is to say that one is accepting particular types of bodies suitable for the particular material qualities one is involved with. An ignorant bystander might have simplistically interpreted Krishna's pastime of lifting Govardhan Hill as follows. The residents of Vrindavan were obliged by Vedic principles to make certain offerings to the god of heaven, Indra. Child Krishna, ignoring the position of Indra, usurped these offerings and took them for his own pleasure. When Indra tried to punish Krishna and his associates, the Lord frustrated Indra's attempt, humiliated him, and exhausted his pride and resources. But this superficial interpretation is refuted in this verse. Here Lord Indra addresses Sri Krishna as Bhagavan, indicating that he is not an ordinary child, but in fact God. Therefore Krishna's punishing Indra was part of his mission of protecting religious principles and curbing down the envious. It was not a display of material anger or of greed for the offerings meant for Indra. Sri Krishna is pure spiritual existence, and his simple, sublime desire is to engage all living beings in the perfect, blissful life of Krishna consciousness. Krishna's desire to make us Krishna conscious is not egotistical, since ultimately Krishna is everything, and Krishna consciousness is objectively the best consciousness. Lord Indra is really the humble servant of Krishna, a fact he is now beginning to remember.
Om Jnana Tamarandasya Gnanjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha.
So let's refer back to the previous verse. We're told at the beginning of this purport, we're advised that this philosophical statement in this verse is carrying on from the previous verse. In the previous verse, we read, King Indra said, "Your transcendental form, a manifestation of pure goodness, is undisturbed by change, shining with knowledge, and devoid of passion and ignorance. In you does not exist the mighty flow of the modes of material nature, which is based on illusion and ignorance." And then we read, "How then could there exist in you the symptoms of an ignorant person, such as greed, lust, anger, and envy, which are produced by one's previous involvement in material existence, and which cause one to become further entangled in material existence? And yet, as the Supreme Lord, you impose punishment to protect religious principles and curb down the wicked." So we're informed that this is a very complex philosophical statement by Indra, and it certainly is. We're hearing here that by one's affection, by the infection by the modes of nature, that one is infected by the modes of nature by coming in contact with them by the desire to enjoy material energy. And then that infection of the modes of nature propels one further on to be infected by the same qualities, lust, anger, greed, envy, and so on. So that's the position of the conditioned soul. He keeps rotating from one body to another again and again, thinking he's the doer, and yet controlled completely, hand and foot, by the three modes of material nature. I wanted to read something about these modes of nature. There, of course, is much information in Bhagavad Gita, but it's presented nicely in a book by His Holiness Jayadvaita Swami called Vanity Karma. And he injects this topic of the three modes of nature into this discourse, this dialogue between knowledge and Ecclesiastes. It's a book in the Bible, and the Bhagavad Gita. This is the section that I wanted to refer to. The speaker of the Ecclesiastes is a personality named Kohelet. A threefold cord is not quickly broken, Kohelet says. Two men are better than one, and three still better. Apart from this obviously intended point, some Christian commentators have suggested a veiled reference to the Trinity, and a Vedic commentator may naturally be reminded, though surely this is not what Kohelet had in mind, of the three qualities or modes of material nature: goodness, passion, and ignorance. In Sanskrit, these three modes are called gunas, a term also used more broadly for qualities in general, and used in the more plain and tangible sense to mean ropes. The three material qualities are likened to a triple cord that binds a living being to the world of lifeless matter. The quality of goodness, Krishna says, binds one to happiness. The quality of passion binds one to work. And the quality of darkness, covering one's knowledge, binds one to madness. From goodness, knowledge develops, illuminating all one's senses. Purified by knowledge, one perceives more clearly what is what. And this imparts a natural feeling of happiness. Yet, with this happiness can come a satisfaction that can act against us, making us content with the material world. One is content to be a scholar, a philosopher, a scientist, involved in profound and fascinating intellectual pursuits, doing research and publishing one's thoughts, yet subtly tricked into losing sight of the urgent need for freedom from material existence. In the mode of passion, one doesn't get that far. One is overwhelmed by desires and longings, by the demands of the senses to be gratified. One wants honor, and one wants things. One wants love, and one wants the pleasures of sex. Spurred by passion, one wants and wants and wants. And for what one wants, one has to run the race, fight the battle, do the deal, spend and acquire, woo and win. A man wants a woman a man, and when they unite, their feelings for one another grow, forming a knot of attachment in the heart. If that knot stays tight, they want to live together, to have a home, to live in comfort, and raise a family, and hobnob with friends and relatives. And all of this takes money, hence work. And so one spends most of one's life working to earn a living, toiling to enjoy a happy life. Sound familiar? That isn't in the text. That's me. Speaking for myself. But in the third mode, the mode of darkness or ignorance, one is too dull or foolish to strive, too thick, lazy, or deluded. In ignorance, one plods along, mopes about, or takes refuge in sleep or madness. Why work so hard when it's just as easy to be happy with a bottle, some tablets, or a syringe? The fog takes over, blanketing the world with a dense covering of stupidity. Or the mind is warped, one's inner world fractured, perverted, distorted, bizarre. The quality of ignorance gives us dullards and madmen. And what makes these qualities so powerfully binding is that they act not alone, but together. They act not alone, but together. The person in goodness slips also into bursts of passion and falls into spells of ignorance. The passionate person descends into ignorance and rises into interludes of goodness. And the ignorant person sometimes surfaces to passion and even shows flashes of goodness, as these qualities endlessly mix and intertwine. We are sometimes reflective and good, sometimes impulsive and passionate, sometimes stupid and foolish. Acting together, then, these threefold qualities bind spirit to matter, strap spiritual living beings to material minds and bodies, enforcing the illusion that these are the self, and imprison us so tightly, we have no way to escape. Quote, by the states of being brought on by these three modes, Krishna says, the whole world is bewildered. Illusioned by these three, we don't know who we are. We can't make heads or tails of the world in which we live, let aside understanding God. Krishna continues, speaking as God himself, quote, and so the world fails to understand me, who stand above these three modes as supreme and inexhaustible. I'm sorry to be reading at length, but it's a really good elucidation of the three modes. It explains it very nicely. And especially, it focuses in on how they work combinedly, like three men being stronger than two, to completely bewilder the conditioned soul. Completely bewilder him. According to the Bhagavad Gita, these three modes are supernaturally powerful because they are energies of the divine, God. For souls who turn their gaze from reality to illusion, from spirit to matter, from the eternal to that which comes and goes, these three modes of Maya, the bewildering force that rules the material world, are practically insurmountable, like the heavy lines made of three ropes together that moor a ship to a dock. They tie us with triple strength to material life. Quote, but one who surrenders to me, Krishna says, again speaking as God himself, can easily cross beyond them. The various methods of yoga are ultimately meant, therefore, to bring one to the point of surrender to Krishna or the Supreme. And Maharaj concludes, again, this is, none of this is what Kohelet is talking about. His topic is simply that two or three men are better than one. But for readers of the Bhagavad Gita, these themes will naturally suggest themselves. So these three modes of nature are so strong, so binding, and so working, intertwined at the same time on the conditioned soul, that the soul's in this hopeless condition. He's stuck. He doesn't know up from down, as Maharaj says. Left from right. He ends up not knowing what's to be done and what's not to be done. So he does what's not to be done and leaves alone what's to be done. Such is the predicament. And Indra here is saying, Krishna, you're not like that. You act in this world to protect the saintly persons, Prithanaya Saranam Vinashaya Tadushkritam, and to cut down, annihilate the miscreants. But it isn't out of greed, it isn't out of anger, it's not out of envy, it's none of those things. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Samoham Sarvabhuteshu, Name Dveshos Dinapriyaha. Right? I envy no one, I'm not partial to anyone, I'm equal. Te bhujanti tumam bhaktya mayi te teshu chapyaham. But for a devotee, I'm a friend. He's a friend to me. He's in me. I'm a friend to him. My friendship extends to the devotees because it's reciprocal. The devotee approaches Krishna in this mood of service. And Krishna says, all right, come on. In fact, Krishna is so emphatic about it that after that verse, he says that verse, Apichet sudaracharo bhajate mam ananya bhak sadureva samantavya. I am such a friend to the devotees that I consider a devotee who's having some difficulty, saintly if he's fixed in his determination. And he quickly becomes righteous. Chipram bhavati dharmam sasvat chantim nagacchati. That's the extent of Krishna's friendship to his devotee. How wonderful. And that's what Krishna's mood is ultimately for the conditioned soul. He's sending Prabhupada, he's sending devotees, he's sending incarnations, he's coming himself to say, come on, this isn't where you belong. You can rise above these modes of nature, entangling and completely distorting of your vision as they are, completely bewildering of they are. I'm here for you. But the conditioned soul says, nah. He's just a historical personality. It's a good read, the Bhagavad Gita. But I have my commentary, which says that it's to teach detachment and the Krishna is now really God. He's just an incarnation of the mode of goodness. And I kind of like it this way because then I can read the Gita and get something out of it that, you know, makes my material life a little more manageable and palatable. I have one close friend who said, life is like this. You have to enjoy it, but be detached. You have to grasp it and let it go. You know? You might have heard that before from you. You know, so as not to get too entangled, you just grab onto it and then let it go. The problem is you don't let it go because there is such a thing as samskaras. Attachment takes place very subtly in the mind. The conditioned soul doesn't know that he's building his next body in this life. Every action he takes, every desire he dwells upon, every desire that becomes manifest into action, jayato vishayan punksa sangas teshu bhajayate, and so on, propels him to another body because that body is being built in this life subtly. He goes in his subtle body to the new body, which is more apt for his actions that were performed in this life. Gruesomely, he may take birth in a lower species to pursue the gross material desires and activities that he had cultivated in his momentary life as a human being. Very momentary. When you get older, you notice how quickly life goes by. It's an amazing illusion, really. When you're young, the afternoons of enjoyment after school seem to last forever. The summer breaks, you know, the dalliance with friends and so forth seems to go on forever. But time seems to constrict itself, doesn't it, when you get older? Can anyone verify that this is the truth? You see that time is actually rushing on. The time you looked at so expansively for enjoyment, for pursuit of one's goals in life, seemed to constrict. The warning is there. The wrinkled skin, the sagging flesh, the dulling mind. All the warnings are there. And yet, if you find someone elderly, especially if you're a young person and they're Krishna conscious, you better hear from them. They have lessons in life. What to speak of experience with Shastra, experience with association of devotees, that you're only beginning to acquire. You're only beginning to acquire them. This business of offering obeisances to senior Vaishnavas, this is not just some empty-minded etiquette. There's a reason we do that. We do it because, in general, such devotees are impregnated with knowledge from their experience, from their association with devotees. And by their association, not counting me, but by their association, you can be uplifted in your own Krishna consciousness rapidly. Right? Association is so important. And the opposite holds true. Association with materialistic persons is very, very degrading. It's insidious. I use that word because you don't necessarily notice right away the effect. Again, these things are working on the subtle platform, association. I have one close friend who described the effects of falling down into the modes of nature, particularly in that person's case, alcoholism. You don't see it approaching you. You don't see how it's coming upon you. And then one day you wake up and you say, my God, what happened? What happened to me? But by then you're so entangled, so broken by the effects of passion and ignorance, especially ignorance in that case, that you have very little hope of escaping. And yet Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Daivi ye shugunamai mama maya duratyaya mam eva je prapadyante mayam etang tarantite. Yes, very binding. You get very stuck. Practically insurmountable. But if you surrender unto me, if you engage in devotional service, you can easily cross beyond. It's like just the opposite. You can easily cross beyond. He's holding out this, you know, hope, which we should be very enthusiastic for. You can easily cross beyond it. Not a big deal. So Indra's appreciating this transcendental quality of Krishna. In the previous verse, he says, you're shining with knowledge. You're completely transcendental. And here he's saying, he's appreciating how you're not affected by any of these qualities, lust, anger, greed, envy. And yet, you act to protect the people in general. You curb down the wicked. You protect religious principles. You impose punishment. Of course, the three modes of nature are punishment enough. For most of us who are engaged in sinful activities, Krishna doesn't have to come as an incarnation. He's got the three modes. We can take a good beating that way. Most demoniac persons are disposed of. They're dispatched. And yet at the same time, they carry on their activities for some time, and it's just suitable for one concluding that, well, this guy, he's a gross materialist. He seems to be having a good life. But you don't see what's happening in the next life. Sometimes you see, even in this life. But there's this tendency for sinful reactions to accumulate in such a way that they fully manifest in subsequent lifetimes. So, the conditioned soul is again, by the bewildering potency of Maya, allowed to continue in this ignorance. Ah, well, you know, I can live like that. I can enjoy. I can manifest my supremacy over matter because Joe such and such is doing it, or this guy, or that guy, or this lady, or that lady. Look how we call them celebrities. We celebrate their life of degradation. Let's drink to that. That's how it goes on. We don't do that in Krishna consciousness. We feel very sorry to see that anybody's celebrating somebody who's bound for hellish conditions of life. In fact, who's already in a hellish mentality. We don't celebrate that. We lament it. We form conspiracies to change that person's trajectory. You want the conspiracy? Any conspiracy theorists out there? Well, here's the real conspiracy. The devotees are engaged in a mass conspiracy to bring down the entire material civilization and bring up Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada famously said, if they knew what I was doing, they would kill me. Bringing about a revolution in this misdirected civilization. That's what we're about. But to do that, we have to start, the revolution starts here, right? It starts right here. We have to surrender to Krishna. We have to police our own consciousness, our own activities, and say, wait a minute, is this in keeping? Because Maya is always standing there. You know, you give an inch, she takes a mile. Just as Krishna will take 10 steps towards you for your one step towards him, Maya will also. 1 inch, 1 mile. We can't leave the door open. When we find it open, we have to pull it shut. You know? We have to act in this way so that we can be good servants of our acharyas, of Srila Prabhupada, of our spiritual masters, and ultimately of Krishna. I wanted to conclude by reading one thing. It's a kind of, on the positive side we do this for Krishna, but on the negative side we have the warnings. And those are important. So let me just see if I can get this thing going. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there are some verses where Lord Chaitanya is instructing Sanatana Goswami. And he talks about the standard behavior of a Vaishnava, and also about what happens if this behavior is not adhered to. This is a verse, it's Majjhalila, chapter 22, text 87. We begin there. Asat sanga tyag e Vaishnava achar, stri sangi eka sadhu Krishna bhakta ar. That's not Krishna bhakta, it's Krishna abhakta. Krishna bhakta ar. For a Vaishnava, the standard behavior is to avoid the association of ordinary people not interested in Krishna bhakti. Such common people are, first, those who are too materially attached, especially to women, and second, people who are not at all devotees of Lord Krishna. Vaishnavas should avoid the company of these two kinds of people. And then, I'll just read the translation. By association with worldly people, one becomes devoid of truthfulness, cleanliness, mercy, gravity, spiritual intelligence, shyness, austerity, fame, forgiveness, control of the mind, control of the senses, fortune, and all opportunities. One should not at any time associate with a coarse fool who is bereft of the knowledge of self-realization and who is no more than a toy animal in the hands of a woman. The illusion and bondage that accrue to a man from attachment to any other object are not as complete as that resulting from association with a woman or with men too much attached to women. And I'll just add that goes for the women. If you're attached, if you maintain attachment with worldly people who are attached for sex life and attached for material enjoyment, this is what you lose also as devotees. This is what you lose as non-devotees. Whatever scrap of these qualities you have as a non-devotee, you lose by associating with people in lower modes of nature who are attached in this way. Celebrities. So let's be careful about our association. Let's appreciate every day and read Srimad Bhagavatam and these wonderful treatises by the acharyas so that we can understand our position and what our duty really is. And in that way, our hearts will become purified. We'll have no more lingering vestiges of desire to enjoy this material world, any vestige of which will prevent us from achieving Krishna prema. And we'll go on to be really successful in spiritual life. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments? Any contributions to the subject?
Thank you for your enlightening words. It seems if I have a program of chanting at least 16 rounds, usually many more, and coming to a Mangalartik and reading the right books, that I'm automatically building a spiritual body more. As I says, even if the person has faults, if they're spending more time, and isn't it more to what you're planning? Like, I plan to come to Mangalartik. I plan to do this. There's a difference between having material attachments and maintaining them, isn't there?
Yes. Yes, that's a really good point. We shouldn't be thinking we're not making progress because maybe some lingering attachment is there, some thoughts are coming through the mind. The mind is always taking these things in and out. It's a question of whether or not you act on them. And if you are engaged in Krishna consciousness in the way that Shruti Prabhu is describing, you're very much on the safe side. There may be some lingering interest or even, you know, some attention that comes and goes, but that dwindles more and more. That's why Krishna consciousness is sometimes described as bhakti yoga. It's a gradual process. It doesn't mean that success, perfection, purification comes instantaneously, although that can happen. It means that on the process, especially of Vaidhi Bhakti, one gradually becomes purified, gradually, gradually. And the success comes because Krishna becomes very satisfied within the heart. Sometimes Krishna even withholds the taste for chanting so that one will become more and more determined. Krishna works that way. But eventually one achieves success. Therefore, in the nectar of instruction, we are enjoined to endeavor with enthusiasm, utsaha nischaya daryat, and patience. Those qualities guarantee success. Is that right? Any other comments or questions?
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
You did mention about the conspiracy theory, and at the same time you also talk about not associating with a certain kind of people. How do we bring that balance if it's someone who's very close, like family? Could you suggest?
You should always be in the mood of giving association. Like in the workplace, I think it was Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about how you can be, there's a kind of a formal politeness, you know, but you don't associate intimately, you know. Like you don't go to your, suppose you're a family, many of us Westerners come from families that are engaged in regularly in sinful activities, thinking this is a way we exchange affection, you know. What they put on the table, what they drink, what they watch on that television, all these things are actually not good, or most of them. So if we take that association and engage in those things, if we get intimate in that way, that's bad. But if we give association and at the same time carefully, without disturbing, draw the lines, you know, for our own consciousness, our own behavior, that's okay. That's what you have to do. I mean, you know, there are people here who have jobs out in the material world. How are you going to work amongst the non-devotees unless you maintain some sort of communication? Go on, girl. Get away from me, low-class fool. You know, you can't do this. Not practical. Nor is it actually beneficial to them. You know, I know devotees who have jobs. The non-devotees are gradually becoming attracted to Krishna consciousness because this person's I don't know what it is, he's glowing or something, and man, he brings the best food to lunch, and I don't know. They get attracted, but that devotee is careful not to associate too intimately and take on the qualities of those persons, rather to give. Is that okay?
Hare Krishna. So like you were talking about that we cannot avoid going to a job, associating with those people,
yeah,
and things like that. So practically one problem which I feel is I cannot close my eyes to you know, so many attractive things I come across during the daytime. This is what my question is.
Okay. Well, you better start.
I mean, really physically, I cannot close my eyes. I find something attractive the whole day.
So continue your chanting of Hare Krishna. Continue hearing Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. And practice. The next time you feel a strong attachment to something through your eyes, avert them. You say you can't, but close your eyes right now. Okay. Is that really that difficult? What's difficult isn't closing the eyes. What's difficult is up here. I've already got it in my head. But that you can cure. That can be, the mind can be purified by association with devotees and by hearing. Again, as we were talking about with Chudi Prabhu, there's hope, but there has to be application. In other words, you're saying you can't, you know, avert your eyes, you can't get your mind off of these things, but you're here in Bhagavatam class. Why aren't you out there chasing some beautiful skirt or some, you know, this or that? You're here. So there is something. There is progress. Prabhupada talked about, in Mumbai, he talked about, why aren't all these people coming to the temple? Why aren't they not here? Why are in Bombay, everybody's out there? Yesham twantakatam papam jananam punya karman. He quoted that verse. Because they haven't acted piously. They're addicted to sense gratification. But you're here. That's progress. Are you chanting Hare Krishna? That's progress. Keep it up. The mind will come under control. It takes a little time. It's not immediate. Maya's going to keep saying, you're really not for the devotees. You know? One devotee famously told Srila Prabhupada, I'm so attracted by things I see, Srila Prabhupada. I won't say who the devotee is, you know. And he relates it in remembrances of Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, then you will go blind. So that's another way to understand, to get a little strength for averting one's eyes, for controlling one's mind. There are repercussions for trying to enjoy material life. I'll give you another example. When I came to Krishna consciousness, I got some books. A week later, I was in the temple. 2 weeks later, I was thinking, have I kind of jumped in the deep end of the pool? Should I have done this? My temple president, I talked with him, and he took me aside. This was in 1978, and he said, Steve, I want you to read something. And he handed me the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam and turned me to description of the hellish planets. The same chapter that had bewildered some devotees when it came out. He said, hey, wait a minute, this is too heavy, I can't handle this. I read it and I said, that makes sense. Maybe it was the Roman Catholic background that I had, you know, heaven and hell. But I said, yeah, that makes sense. You can't get away with trying to enjoy sinful life. You're going to get reactions, right? So that's another thing you could do. Read fifth canto description of the hellish planets. Any other comments or questions?
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Hare Krishna Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Though I keep hearing all these things, whatever you have shared in the class, but practically applying is a very tough job for me. Could you please suggest something for it?
You're practically applying it, though. It's the same, basically the same answer. You know, you're here. It's cold out. You could be in your bed. You're here. You're seeing the deity forms of the Lord. You're hearing the words of Srimad Bhagavatam. You're hearing the realizations of other devotees. You're chanting the holy names. That's your success.
It's but very difficult to control my mind when I'm chanting.
Well, that's all right. Just keep on chanting. Just hear the name. Hear the name. Hear. When your mind goes away, pull it back. Just like Krishna advises in Bhagavad Gita. From wherever the mind wanders to its flickering and unsteady nature, one must bring it back under the control of the self. In this case, under the control of the holy name. Be stubborn for Krishna. You know? As we say in the West, grow a backbone. Grow a backbone. Be stubborn. You know? And don't give up. Because eventually the mind will subside. Prabhupada gives the example of the tiger, you know? Tiger's a wild animal. But what does the trainer do? He withholds food. He withholds food until the tiger's like, oh. He shows the stick and he withholds food. And then eventually he gives the tiger some food and the tiger begins, oh, this man is my friend. I will do what he says. You have to treat the mind like that. You have to practice not giving it quarter. You ever heard of that expression? You give your enemy no quarter. Right? So in the beginning, you have to treat the mind as an enemy. You have to. You can't regard it as a friend in the beginning because it's not. It's the reason you have this material body. It's the reason you've been revolving through species after species, been in the body of a dog, a cat, a mouse, an elephant, a human being, a demigod, back down to a dog. That's our problem. We pay attention to this crap in our heads. But with the mind purified can be the best of friends, Krishna affirms in Bhagavad Gita. So purify the mind. Be determined. You have to be stubborn, though. You have to be stubborn for Krishna. Develop that stubbornness, and you'll be successful.
What should I do to get that stubbornness?
Associate with devotees. And learn to say no to Maya. The next time you feel a weakness for Maya, say, no. I'm the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. I'm not going to go in that direction. Practice makes perfect. Okay? And always chant Hare Krishna, even if your mind is going. Just chant. It will stop going. It will eventually take shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna, and you'll attain peace.
Thank you.
Anyone else? It's time now, 9 o'clock. One more question, comment? Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Kibu.